from the Little Ranch House studio on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Blind Handyman Show.
Yay!
All right.
Well, hello there. And welcome, everybody, for the next hour. Oh, we better tell it. It's show number 182. It's December 5th, 2006.
Yep.
And we've got an hour here to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining. All, of course, designed with the blind in mind. Our host, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Donald Shaw.
Hey, Mr. Tom Houston.
So nice.
What's happening?
Oh, not a whole lot, but Don Patterson's here today.
Got up off my deathbed. Got up off my sick bed and came in to be with my mates today.
It's certainly nice to have you with us, Donald. My name's Tom Houston, but here he is, folks. Here's the creator, the producer of the Blind Handyman Show, ladies and gentlemen. Phil Parr.
Thank you so much.
You're certainly welcome.
It is just wonderful. We're all four here. This is our last show before the end of the year, before the beginning of the year 2007. So we thought we'd all gather here at our little ranch house on Southwood Drive and do our last show.
End of the line.
End of the line.
This is it for 2006. I didn't think about it that way, but that's true.
Man, it's just weird how fast time goes. It just seems like it was hot summertime a couple days ago, didn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
I think it really was.
We have had.
May not have been summer, but it was hotter.
We've had a tremendous cold snap for East Texas. It doesn't usually happen, but it was 26 degrees when I got up this morning.
Oh, I think they're claiming that we're 12 to 14 degrees below normal.
Yeah.
That'd be about right.
Gas bills will be astronomical.
I think tonight we're not going to go down all the way to freezing, I don't believe.
Oh, really? Have a few warmer days?
It's going to warm up a little bit.
36, I think, is on the internet, and up to 62 tomorrow.
All
right.
But I welcome it.
Compared to what they've had in Ohio and up through there, we've had nothing. They've had,
that's true, yeah.
There's 10,000 people in St. Louis out of power right now.
You have been without for a week?
Yeah, for a week. So I don't know. You know, we're fortunate down here. We have power. Anyway, it's the last day, and it's cold. It's about 60 outside. Nice, pretty day.
Yeah,
we could build a fire after the show, Don, if you wanted to, if we had time. Anyway, we're all gathered here having a little libation and enjoying the exchanging pleasantries, as they say.
Yeah.
And we have a couple of guys we're going to have on as guests today. Dale Campbell and Pete Mikacek are going to be our guests, and we'll have them on in a little while. Right now, it's list mail time. Yes,
hey,
friends.
All right. Hi, everyone. I would like to get some suggestions on a cordless screwdriver.
Yeah.
I'm basically looking for one that's small with a lot of power. Now, if anyone small, has a lot of power, please let me know so I can review it and see if it's something I would like. I will be using it around the house and in my wood shop. I'm sure I would be using it for other things. Otis Blue sent that to us.
Well,
or he listed
it,
I should say.
A cordless screwdriver is going to be just so powerful. I mean, they can just make them so powerful. Do they make 18-volt cordless screwdrivers? I know they do drills.
I don't know the voltage. Mine's about 3 years old, but I have the Black & Decker pivot, they call it. And there's a little switch where you can fold it in half.
Yeah.
It looks like a six-shooter. You know, and it's space a saver. Nice size, it's light, and it had, you know, just the standard bits that come with it, like a Phillips tip or a straight edge. But then also when there's no bit in the socket that's permanently attached to the screwdriver that you slide the bits in, and there's no chuck, you just stick the bits in this. That is happens to be a quarter inch, like a sheet metal screw socket. So you really have kind of three tools in one, and I've had good. It uses the little round oblong batteries that you have several tools that use,
and they still make those batteries.
They still make those, which is not always the case. I.e., our Craftsman
obviously Sears has nothing to do with this.
Big drills, and it was an inexpensive tool. My wife bought it for me for Christmas, I think, and it's maybe $29, $39 max, and I like it really
well.
They're
handy things to have around the
house. Mine is just a straight screwdriver, and it runs. It's got plenty of power, but it runs real slow. But it does the job. I mean, it does a nice job, but it just runs.
Yeah, they're not going to be near as high speed as a drill, but mine run, you know, go. But it, the reel, it's a two-position switch, forward and reverse.
Yeah.
There's not
yeah.
the neutral place that you can go to, which I like. And like I say, I like the little the fold-up button that you can where it sort of fits in tighter places.
Yeah, space saver handle. Yeah, those are nice.
Well, Clifford Wilson now had a response to that.
Well, he was.
That was a little bit different from you guys.
All right.
Yeah, we've met Clifford. He says, I own several cordless screwdrivers, the larger of which also works as a drill. My favorite small model is the Milwaukee. It's small enough to fit nicely into the pocket of most workbench, and it's lightweight. The gearing makes it a slow-moving tool, but powerful. I prefer the slower speed, as I have less mishaps. To small jobs, it cannot be beat. The larger jobs, such as installing drywall all day, I like the, and I'm not sure about this brand name because he may have misspelled it here. Well, I like the Delt, D-E-A-L-T model.
I have no idea.
Either 18 volt or the next size below. I've never used the newest large models using high voltages, but I expect they're even better for heavy all day type work.
Yep.
I find that most jobs around the house do not need a large model, so I keep the Milwaukee charged and ready.
Oh, yeah.
You can use it as a straight-handle screwdriver or simply bend it in the middle to form a pistol grip configuration.
Yep.
Yep.
This little fella even comes with an adjustable clutch for ensuring that you don't wring off the heads of screws or plunge too
deeply. Mine has that adjustable clutch thing. But also you can buy, and I have a really neat deal that has a, it's reversible deal that has a drill bit on one end for drilling pilot holes, and then it has a place for a screwdriver, either slotted or Phillips, on the other end. You can put any size. Of course, you have to have an Allen wrench to change the screwdriver, but you just drill your pilot hole and switch this thing around, and you've got a screwdriver.
Now, I like that.
Yeah,
so it's pretty
neat.
It's pretty handy.
Also, and I was talking about my Black & Decker, maybe $29 or $39. I have a little drill. I mean, a little screwdriver.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I don't like about it. But anyway, I think it was like $10 or something, and it works. But you plug the battery charger directly into it. In other words, the battery does not come out of it.
Okay.
So if it cratered out, of course, you've only lost $10. But it has the adjustable clutch, believe it or not.
Yep.
And so that I've never, but my little Black & Decker does not have that clutch, but I've never seen the time that it needed it. I mean, it's powerful. It, you know.
Yeah, you know, what chances of snapping the head off a drywall screw are pretty minuscule with those?
I have done that with the sheet metal screw with the Black & Decker.
Really? Snap the head off a sheet metal screw? Anyway, there's several kinds, and maybe that'll give you some idea of our experience with cordless screwdrivers. Yes, friends.
Here's a guy. He wants to know if there's a safe way of bringing in an outdoor fireplace into the living room.
Oh, get out of town.
Said he was thinking of setting the unit on some cement blocks so it didn't burn the carpet. Any thoughts on the subject? Gene Poole.
I remember this discussion.
Yeah, it's going to smoke the house up like a crazy man.
It'll kill you, won't it?
Well, it's you know, why would you want it? Come on, Gene. Get a grip.
Well, I mean, you would have to obviously put a smokestack out someplace, and without that,
you've got to vent it, or you're going to have a house full of smoke.
That's what I was.
What did the list say? Is there any responses on there?
Well, I didn't print any responses. Most of them would say, be really careful and get somebody that knows exactly what they're doing.
Don't do it, Gene. Come on, don't do it.
That's
it's
right.
not a good
you
idea.
Know, periodically, you have. I think we've even had several house fires or asphyxiation from people. Obviously, maybe short of finances at the time that bring in their barbecue pits and try to stay warm.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just a deadly combination.
That's probably not a good idea.
That's a foolish thought.
Well,
one of the responses, by the way, on the list is
you're
going to wake up dead from carbon monoxide poisoning.
Set the couch on fire. Hotel.
Yeah, same difference, I guess.
Yeah, just sit on your recliner. Just take a match to your recliner and be about to say, you know, don't do that. That's not good thinking. You got to vent it or you're going to be in trouble. My wife actually thought she built a fire Saturday, and she said, would you open the damper? And I didn't in a timely fashion. So she reached up there, couldn't see, reaching up in there, and she got into some insulation. There's some insulation kind of right at the front, just a little ribbon of insulation right there at the front.
Really?
And she touched it, and she came in and said, I reached up in the fireplace, and there's something furry up in there. I took a flashlight, and it's just all over the place. So I went in and reached up and looked, and sure enough, it's a little insulation. So I just cut it, just took a something knife and cut it, and it's gone. So the thing that's furry up in there is gone.
Bring
furry.
Them back alive.
A bat.
Yeah, you captured that.
Something furry, like we'd had animals. You know,
how would in the chimney.
How would an animal with a dapper cloth get down into the, you know, other than an owl? We've got a cover on the chimney now.
Yeah.
Guy gave me a cover. What was that?
Oh, one of the screens on the chimney?
On top.
That was Frankie moaning.
Was that Frankie making noise?
The train's going
down. Yeah, the train.
I wish I had a mic outside. It'd be good.
Going down.
All right, Tommy?
Here's a guy who said he would like to put a board on my miter gauge for my table saw to support cross cuts. Of what kind of wood should I make it? How long? How wide? And how should I attach it to the gauge?
I don't know what he's talking about.
This was a good discussion.
The fellow's name's John.
What's he talking about? I don't know what's he talking about.
Adding an extension to make the miter box gauge just longer in order if you were cutting a board to get, I guess, give it more support. I remember this. Got several responses on this discussion.
Okay.
What I don't remember what kind of wood that they recommended using, but did you print one?
I did. I printed one, and I'll read that to you. Says, hi, John. I have the same dilemma, but I decided to go another route. I plan to make a cross-cut sled for my table saw. I have an old miter gauge. I'm going to take the bar off and fasten it to a piece of plywood about a half inch or more than the distance from the blade. I will then run it through the saw, making a zero clearance cut along the edge of the plywood. I will then use a square and fasten a one-inch board perpendicular to the blade edge. I will then be able to both measure and cut accurate cross cuts on my table saw. I will probably eventually use T-nuts so that I can move the 1-inch board to 45 degrees as well as the original 90 that I'm making.
Okay.
Now, another great tip for your miter gauge is to get a piece of sticky backed sandpaper and glue it to your gauge. It will help preventing the stock from sliding a little when pushing the saw, making better cuts. And the fellow's name is Lenny.
To get a grip, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. What difference would it make what kind of wood you use? Plywood would be,
I don't know.
Would work just fine, wouldn't it?
I guess just something that would stay good and straight and wouldn't warp on you or something to make a good straight edge. But
unless you get it wet, it won't warp.
Plywood. Because when I had my table saw, I had also a board on the miter box gauge just to make it just makes an extent, just something to put your whatever you're cutting up against, just to give you an easier way to hold.
Uh-huh.
Things that work good, and you know, it extended out. I don't know. I guess, 8 or so inches out to the left side of the miter box.
Of course, you can those little roller things that I have that you lay the board on.
Yeah,
would work.
Yeah, yeah, you could use.
And they're cheap.
If you had a long type board to cut.
They're easy. They're cheap to buy.
Just something to help you push the board along through the blade, I guess, just to give you a little extra support.
Yeah, whatever you could put, you could. As far as I know, you could use any kind of wood. I don't know what would make any difference.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right.
Okay, that sounds good to me.
Is that all you got? What else you got?
Also, I've got something here from Ray Broyce, a little deal. It's how to add years of life to your refrigerator door seals.
I saw this. Read it. Yeah. It's good.
He says, hi, here's a simple trick that will most likely prevent you ever having to replace either of your refrigerator door seals. It becomes even more valuable if you own one of the newer models whose seals are no longer attached with screws, but glued on. Once every year, make it a part of spring house cleaning. Anyone still do spring house cleaning? Wipe down the working surfaces of the seals with a damp cloth and dry. Then apply a thin film of petroleum jelly to the hinge side surface of both seals. Only to the hinge side working surface that connects the cabinet, not the whole seal.
Yeah, because
this allows the sliding face of the seal to, well, slide across the hinge side cabinet face and prevent its twisting and tearing, the number one cause of failure. There was a time when new refrigerators, at least Frigidaires, arrived from the factory with this already done, but that was back in the late 70s. I'm dating myself, and we'll drop that subject. Ray Price.
Ray Price. Nice to have Ray Price on the list. Yeah.
That's the Australian guy, isn't it?
That is the Australian guy, isn't it? Yep. It is. He comes on Friday nights and talks to us in our little chat room on Friday nights, and then it's Saturday afternoon there, you know. Getting ready to listen to Prairie Home Companion.
That's right.
Something, I don't know what. Anyway, it makes sense because that seal on that side, on the hinge side, has to kind of scoot when you close the door. And it would, you know, there'd be more wear there. So if you put a little petroleum jelly, Vaseline or whatever, on there, it would move easier along the surface of the fridge.
Yeah, good tip. That sounds reasonable to me.
Well, I have to admit, I've never thought of anything.
The best in the world at going and finding these little jewels, isn't he?
He likes to do research on these things.
He does.
He's good at editing. I know he puts a lot of time and effort into that. We appreciate it.
Any question you ask, Ray will go find the answer if no one knows the answer on the list. And it's for sure we're not going to know the answer, but if someone on the list doesn't know the answer, Ray will go and find it
for
you.
He'll research it.
He will.
Find some info.
Well, I guess since we have two guests, we should take a break now.
We should get started.
And go and put one of them on, and then we'll have Dale Campbell on in just a minute. We are blessed with everybody here today. Tom Houston and both the Dons, and I'm Phil Parvack in just a minute. Saxophone player there. We're back with the Blind Handyman Show, and Pete Mikicek is with us. How are you, sir?
Hey, Phil, how you doing?
I'm good, and you?
Pretty good.
I've forgotten where you are, or your location.
I'm on a little island off the end of Long Island, about 100 miles east of New York City.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
We've had other guests on since you, so I had forgotten. You're just kind of out there on your own, aren't you, huh?
Yeah, just adrift in the sea.
Adrift in the sea, but you have internet connections and telephones and things like that, so you're really not adrift, are you?
No.
Well, you've been doing all sorts of projects. Where do you want to start? What do you want to start with?
Gee, I don't know.
Windows or doors.
Windows or doors or whatever. You've done all kinds of things. You still have the energy to do things like that.
Yeah, well, I have no choice, really.
Is that right? I guess there aren't too many vendors out there where you are.
No, not really. And I kind of like doing the stuff, and it comes out pretty good sometimes.
Yeah?
Not always, but...
Oh, I understand that theory. Sometimes, especially plumbing projects.
Really?
The ones I have problems with. So you put in some new windows, or where did I hear that?
Oh, you know what happened? When I first bought this house, we have the old-fashioned storm windows.
Uh-huh.
And there's two panes, inside pane and an outside pane. And,
yeah.
You know, one's up top, one's at the bottom.
Well, then,
I guess they had them, they closed them the wrong way. So for who knows how many years, instead of the water, like, shedding the water, it kind of like funneled the water inside the window.
So they pulled the top one down, so it was outside. And oh, man. How dumb can you be?
What a deal.
So the window sill was all rotted, and all the wood around the window was rotted, and under the window was rotted. So,
wow.
And I didn't deal with it for years. I just put like a piece of metal under it and closed it and left. And,
yeah. But then the time came.
I finally got around to one of the last windows I had to repair on this house. And you know, it's hard because you read all these things and you think you know everything. And when you go to see, you get yourself into some situations that just are not anything. I mean, you just have to kind of engineer something then and there on the spot. It's not always clear cut. Like people say, oh, you just take your window out and you pop a new replacement window in. But, you know, if there's no bottom to, you have to, like, build from the bottom up.
Well, yeah. that's part of the project. It's part of the beauty of doing projects. You learn.
Yeah.
You learn by doing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Pete. Yeah, anyway, so you tackle these windows.
Yeah, so I got that window done. I don't know how long ago it was I talked to you guys, but I put in a new front door, and that was the same problem. I mean, that when I took out the old door, there was no frame to bolt a new door to, so I have to, you know, just build the whole thing. But the way they make these outside doors now is so nice. They're if you buy an interior door, it's usually a door with the three, the two sides and the top. But an outside door, it's all four. It's two sides, a top and a bottom, and they're good. They're like inch thick wood, you know, not like three quarters, but full inch thick wood. So they're really solid, and you don't have the same issues of it like slanting, or you could kind of pop it in place and stand it up and build the wall back around it. And I was pretty surprised that it came out okay.
Yeah.
Because the old sill that my door was on was rotted away.
But you're saying there was no frame, so there was nothing on the sides to nail to, or what?
Yeah. There was nothing there. When I took the old door out, I left the frame that the hinges were on. I left that there because there was nothing behind it. And that was pretty sturdy and in place and pretty solid. And So I left that and put the hinge side of the door up against that, and then I just had to build up around it. I had to had to cut the opening a little wider, stuff like that, and put 2x4s in the walls, and it came out pretty good.
This house has not been well cared for by somebody, right?
No, and it's a big time fixer upper, but. You know, it's been here for 120 years, so I guess there's something.
Wow. Oh, really?
About it that's okay.
And these people closed the window the wrong way.
Yeah, for who knows how long. Oh. It must have been a long time.
Yeah, it must have been a long time.
On your little island there, Pete, how far are you from the water, though? I mean, not forgetting about rain, water, no. I mean, how far are you from the ocean?
On foot, like a 15-minute walk.
Yeah, so technically, I mean, it would sort of be like living in Galveston, i.e., the salt water and the salt breeze.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So that's going to be some, for wood, a bad combination, whether it rains.
Yeah,
anyway.
Wood and cars. And everything rusts away right away.
I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, and your cereal, as soon as you open the box of cereal, it gets pretty soggy.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, these wasabi crackers don't last long. You got to eat them all right away.
That's funny. And so, but you have a car. Do you have a wife that drives the car for you?
Yeah.
So your exterior door that you did, I just set a couple myself, and I used like the metal clad, you know...
I got the fiberglass one.
Okay, yeah.
They look nice, too.
And they will probably last longer there than, I've never really seen a metal door deteriorate, but in the salt condition, I mean, we're, 150 to 170 miles inland.
Right, you don't have the same issue.
But I think fiberglass was a wise choice.
Yeah.
And you're right about, did yours have the metal plate at the bottom?
The metal plate
sill?
At the bottom, yeah.
Yeah.
The sill.
Yeah. And it
was
really,
all nice and weather stripped, and it fits nice and solid when it's closed.
I put mine down on concrete, and the first thing I did is I put like a bead of caulking down there and then put that metal plate on there, and even with its own rubber gaskets and sealed, and man, there's just no way any water is going to get in there.
I noticed the other day that my front door that we very seldom use at the bottom looks like it's gotten wet. The veneer is coming off the bottom. I wonder
of the door itself or of the
door itself, and it's a big, nice, expensive, pretty door.
Yep.
With
same
glass.
Thing happened to me.
Same, with all kinds of pretty glass in it, double glass and little panes and all kinds.
And the outside veneer is peeling off.
Yeah, the outside veneer is peeling off.
I have two Anderson patio doors that I put in, wooden patio doors, and it happened to both of them. And I kept putting it off, thinking, oh, I got to fix it, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I don't remember what it was, but my wife or someplace, she was at the near the lumberyard or something, but she came in contact with the guy who sold us the doors from the lumberyard, and he's able to check, the doors are warrantied for 10 years, and he was able to check the code number or something on the door.
Really?
And it was just like 10 years, 3 months. So
would be,
like,
yes.
Well, too bad, you know. But, but the same thing. The veneer is like peeling back from the bottom of the door.
Yeah. And I know it didn't get, if it had gotten wet, we'd have water in the house.
Oh, yeah.
So it didn't get wet. I'm wondering if I can buy, what I'd like to buy is just an aluminum plate and put there.
A kick plate. A kick plate.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if you can buy one of those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're made of aluminum, but they're made out of metal, and some of them are aluminum colored or some of them are brass colored.
I just
installed two on my French doors because of the little puppy.
Yeah.
The puppy is the most violent four-legged creature we've had. She's so single-handedly destroyed our French doors.
Oh, she chewed on them or scratched them?
No, down at the... But scratching them, and she scratched out the weather stripping that goes between the doors. About 2 feet off the ground,
Really? Mm. Phil, your veneer is coming off on the outside or the inside?
No, the outside.
On the outside. But if you put metal on it, I mean, you got to make sure it's... watertight, so water doesn't get behind the metal, between the metal and the wood.
Well, I don't know how water to get it, because it's up on a porch.
They have a covered porch.
Really? Mine are exposed to the outside.
And so there's no way, if I had gotten water on that door, there'd be water in the house, because there's a covered porch there. If we'd had water up on that porch, we'd know it.
But
I don't know what happened.
Didn't you not have, during the hurricane, some water?
No.
One dose of water shouldn't do it, though.
Get that high? You didn't?
No, not that high.
Okay.
No. We didn't, during the hurricane, we didn't have much water.
If you have a leak someplace that's aimed right there.
I don't know where it would be. I mean,
but still, as much roof as there is, it shouldn't be splashing.
Well, I mean, it's 8 feet from the
edge.
And so
it's not water. Something else is wrong.
Something else is wrong, but I was just thinking about, rather than replace, because it's an expensive door. I'm not going to like that. She's not going to. I'm not going to. But I think I'll just get a kick plate and put on there and hope for the best. You know, that'd stave off having to do anything for a while.
It would. It'd buy you some time.
Yeah. Which is really all I'm interested in doing is buying them. Maybe I'll die before she has to replace
the
door.
Yeah, that's right. 50-year cork.
That's good. You could put your kick plate on there and then take it back off. I mean, you screw them. The ones I put on, went on with screws. Put it on there. Get it where you want it and screw it down and then take it back off and put you a silicone caulking there and then screw it back down.
That'd be the sensible thing to do, wouldn't it?
You have to do something.
All right.
And really, you wouldn't even have to do it, but sort of on the top and sides, because water's surely not bouncing up.
I don't see how it could be. This door would be 15 years old because this house is 15 years old, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, I think I'm just going to try that. So you put a whole new front door in, right? Yours was, Pete.
It was pretty. It wasn't too bad. It was the doors. I mean, the whole piece is so sturdy in itself. It's really hard to mess it up. You know,
to get it out of square where it won't.
Yeah. It's hard. You can't really get it out of square because it won't shift.
Pete, that last moment though, when you're lugging, they're heavy.
Yeah.
And you're kind of dragging it into position if you're doing it by yourself, and then there's that last few seconds that you have to pull that staple or that screw out of that goes through the doorknob that holds the door closed.
Right.
And at that point, it can get away and kind of get springy and spongy and go to a 45-degree angle.
Did that happen to you, did it?
Well, I think this came with like a piece of wood. A couple of pieces of wood stapled across the front of the door.
Right.
You're not supposed to take them off until you have the door
in its frame,
in place and secured.
Right.
And then you take them off. So you can't really open the door until you know, but that means you have to get away.
Well, you
any
can
of the
open
casing
it one direction. Yeah, you could open. And mine had the plastic threaded thing that came out the doorknob, and you unscrewed that, and then it freed the door. And like you say, I left the one by two is what it is, or something. Two-inch by a half-inch board across the top that kept the door from swinging one way, but there wasn't anything on the other side. And
oh,
so,
I see what you mean.
You know, as the door opened back, so it can, it's a little tricky. I mean,
doors are always hard. Doors are really hard to put in. It's really hard to get. You'd think it would be so straightforward, but there's always something that gets...
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, but think how it was when you had to freehang one. When it didn't come
originally. In. I had to do like three or four doors like that. That was a real nightmare.
But yeah, well, it didn't come in the frame. You know, they all come in frames now.
Those are much better. But,
put them in.
That's definitely a big improvement.
Trim around them there and make wide trim. If you screw up too bad, you can just make some real wide.
Yeah, sure.
Nice and wide. You know, you look in, like you're talking about, and I bet there was plenty of it in the house you say is over 100 years old. You could probably have several of the doors that somebody actually hung them and had to carve out for the hinges.
Oh, all of mine. Almost all the doors. And I did that also when I replaced a couple of the doors, and I just hung them that way. I just bought it's so cheap just to buy a door, not in a frame.
Yeah.
You know, it's like $25 for a beautiful, solid door. I mean, this was, you know, 12 years ago, but I don't even know. I haven't even seen doors just by themselves.
I don't think you can buy doors by themselves. They all come in frames, don't they?
They're all in frame,
I think you can still buy them by themselves, but I don't know if you'd want to. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Mm.
Did you, in your old house, by the way, did you have any glass doorknobs?
Oh, the crystal one?
Yeah.
Yeah, one upstairs in the bathroom. All the old doors have the old... like skeleton key.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Lock.
Yeah. Yes.
I remember.
And I was able to pull them all out and repair them all. They all come apart.
Yeah.
And you can even reverse them. One door I wanted to reverse because I didn't like the way it was swinging, so I turned the door upside down and I reversed the lock.
Really?
And they're really nice when you take them apart, these really old, and you can still get the keys for them. There's a couple of different key styles that fit them. And,
I think there were three. As a child, somehow, as a little blind Phil, I became fascinated with skeleton key locks. We lived in an old house, and they had all been painted over. So I ruined many table knives of my mother's, scraping the paint off so that I could make those old locks work. You know, and I think I discovered, but there may be more. But I think I had at that time three different styles of keys. One that was very common, and two that had a little different carving on them.
Mm. But it's nice. I don't know how they made that little pocket that the key that the whole assembly slides into.
Yeah.
The giant mortise that the whole lock assembly slides into.
Very carefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and the doors are very thin. They're not. The doors of my house are not like they are now. They're much thinner.
You know, they make a deal that if you want to put a lock on a door that doesn't have a lock that fits on the outside of the door and gives you a little template to cut that, to make that hole with, if you want to put a deadbolt in a door that doesn't have one. Because
mm-hmm.
I looked at it and considered doing it and just didn't. I looked at the tool and didn't have the nerve to rent it. I wasn't sure. I'm going to split this damn door for sure, and I just didn't do it. I don't know what I did. I think I put a bolt on the inside to lock it, but I was wanting to put a deadbolt. Is that door at your house on North Street, Shaw?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That front door?
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to split this door, sure as the world. But so I didn't rent the deal, but they make a little guide to do
I'd
that.
I'd be looking for Patchy Shaw. He probably split it.
Probably.
And bringing it to your attention.
Yeah, well, that's likely.
That door split and been re-glued, but if you replace that door, it didn't split that way. It split an odd way, an odd angle.
No, the inside door is still there, and I replaced the storm door, but not the inside
door. I'm talking about the front door that goes into the front hall.
Not yet.
I have a feeling that every time we mention the Norris Street house on the show, Shaw goes home and does some
make sure
some repairs.
He hadn't gotten up in the attic to find that duck I hacked into that I put in that small room that's back there.
No.
Oh, does Don live in one of a house you used to live in?
Don lives in a house that I lived in 13 years, and I did all kinds of stuff in that house.
Have you found anything, Don? That's
Well, outside of some wiring.
Any incriminating?
Yeah.
There was I left him lots of nice speaker wire in the attic from the stereo place to the playroom. I had the stereo in several different places, so there should be several sets of wire up there.
Yeah, probably still is.
All right, where are we here? It's 3:35. Yeah, what else is happening in your life, sir? You just you don't work anymore? You're retired or what?
I'm like a semi-retired computer guy. I still do. I used to build computers and sell them.
Yeah.
And I used to be a programmer. I used to work at the World Trade Center for many, many years.
Is that right?
Yeah. That was my old buildings. I was very sad about the Trade Center.
Oh, it was. But you retired and moved out here to this outpost.
Yeah. I still do web hosting. You know, I rent web space and stuff. Mm-hmm. I guess like semi-retired now, and I'm just devoting myself to like music and art and stuff.
So what is the name of your little island?
It's called Shelter Island.
Shelter Island.
Shelter Island.
And there are other folks who live on that island also?
In the winter, there's maybe 2,000 people.
That's not where the shelter pony comes from. No, Shetland.
No,
I'm sorry. Just kidding.
2,000 people in the winter, but in the summertime, is it there?
Like 20,000 in the summer.
Oh, man, really?
Wow. Yeah, yeah, it's a big summer resort.
So there are grocery stores.
One.
And a pub.
Well, a bunch of pubs, yeah. But actually, in the winter, there's not too many, and I think there's only one or two open right now.
So you can drive on your island, or do you have to...
Yeah, but you have to take a ferry boat.
Yeah, to get across
that's wild.
To Long Island.
Yeah, there's a ferry boat from Long Island that comes across the
and
bay.
And you're still 100 miles to New York City.
Yeah, but it's very easy to get to the city.
Right.
I mean, I go to the city a lot. It's right across the other side of the ferry is a train or a bus. You know, there's only two trains a day, but it goes right into the heart of Manhattan.
Cool.
Really?
It's pretty convenient for me, and I can walk around the island. So it's
kind of blind friendly.
And so you can do this yourself without side assistance. You can go to New York City by yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow. Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Very
good. It works
out
pretty well.
Sounds like a nice existence to me. We'll be right up.
Yeah, sure, anytime. Yeah.
Hey, Pete, appreciate you, sir, and we'll talk with you in a day or two.
Great.
All right, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Pete Mikicek is that gentleman's name.
Yeah.
Seems like he has his life pretty well together.
Always got some projects going on.
Well, with an old house like that, I guess you always would.
Oh, yeah.
You always will.
But, you know, you're thinking about, well, the reason why I asked him how far he was from the water is...
Oh, yeah, salt water's tough.
You know, you think
everything.
About hurricanes that have come through there, and to have a house that's 100 and some 20 or so years old, it survived a lot.
It has?
Yeah, it really has.
It's even survived Pete. All right, we're going to call our old friend Dale Campbell and sort of ring the end of the year out with Dale's got a little project that he did out in the garage with some cabinets, flipping them upside down. This will intrigue you, and we'll be back in just a minute with more of the Blind Handyman Show. Favorite announcer, do I? We'll try to get him back someday.
Yeah.
Hey, we have a fellow on the line that you've probably met before who is not cooking today. His name is Dale Campbell, sir.
What's going on, fellas?
Man, hey, I don't know anything.
Are y'all ready to cook?
No, we're not going to cook today. No cooking today.
No cooking today.
But the show Sunday was really good, wasn't it?
The show, it was excellent.
Oh, it was. Turned out.
I think the only thing better than the show Sunday
was
being there live.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Being there live was much fun. But you
and
could
get
hear
to taste the shrimp and the hot jalapenos and the Jello shots. And
I think the funniest thing that happened on the show, did you hear Karen Karsh, her statement?
Yes.
Did you? Just sort of yelled it out there. That's, you know, you'd have
Am
to
I
listen.
Am I losing y'all?
You're not losing us. You just have to listen for Karen. Go back and
I
listen to the show.
I think I missed that one. But
go back and listen to the show. And when you were showing the potato chip maker around, Karen yelled something that probably shouldn't have been on the air. We need to talk to your producer about that. But it's funny. I listened to it two or three times to make sure she actually said it.
She said what you think she said?
She said exactly.
I'll have to go back and listen to that. When Tim sent me the copy ahead of time, I missed it too. So I'll have to go back and listen to that.
Well, it's our own little Karen Karsh with her own take on the potato chip maker, and it's pretty funny. Anyway, what's going on in your world there down at Houston?
Well, we are getting I've chopped some plywood down a little bit earlier, and it's kind of chilly down this way.
Yeah, a little bit.
But it's not too bad out here to make some bottoms to some cabinets. You know, I've got an area in the garage. It's kind of a dead area where basically the house foundation, they could have extended the house about another 3 feet out into the garage, but they didn't do it.
Oh, yeah?
So when you walk out into the garage, we have, you can call it a ledge that's about 10 feet long and about 3 feet deep, and it's about a foot, about a foot higher than the rest of the garage.
That is the same level as the foundation the house sits on.
Right.
Okay.
So they could have taken the dining room wall.
Yeah, moved it out.
And moved it out. And there's a header beam up above us, you know, up above this drop-off, if you will, the edge of the foundation, to where it could have supported the rest of the house there.
Yeah.
Was it originally built for a washer and dryer? They do a
well,
lot of
no,
that.
we have a laundry room.
Strange.
Again, in this neighborhood, I imagine they have the same plan for, you know, all these different houses. And, in fact, our house, there's one that has 4 bedrooms. It has 3 upstairs. And ours has 2 upstairs and then a big open cathedral ceiling, you know, over the living room. So it just a different design. But I'm like, golly, fellas. So basically I lost an entire wall in the garage for storage or basically for my radial arm saw. And my radial arm saw, I built a table for it until it's 12 feet long. And I had stacked, that's where I held all my rough lumber underneath it, and then I had cabinets on either side of the motor head that I kept all my paints and stains and screws and all that good stuff in, and that's all gone now because I don't have room for it.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, I need cabinets out here. And I looked into building them, and I was going to buy some plywood and get after it, and then I got to thinking, you know, let me price some prefab kitchen cabinets. And at Lowe's and Home Depot, they were oak, you know, unfinished, and they were about $120 a unit. And these are 3-foot just base units. You know, they've got the 2 drawers that slide out and then the cabinets underneath them. And I started calling around. I called McCoy's. And McCoy's had some that were made out of poplar.
Yeah.
That were on clearance for $75.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Okay.
I was like, I will be there as quickly as I can get Kelsey there.
With my truck and trailer.
Yeah, yeah. We're on our way.
Yeah.
So we got down there, and actually, I mean, even a 30-inch, I had them priced because I had 10 feet of area, and I thought, well, let me get 2 36s, you know, put 2 36 base units in, and then a 30-inch base unit, and I'll have a little bit of room over here.
Yep.
But the 30-inch base units were like regular price at about $100 and some.
Wow.
So I ended up ordering 6 base units, and then I also ordered 2 15-inch high wall cabinets. And the way I place this, I place 3 base units on, you know, on the floor, and then I placed 2 of the 2 wall cabinets on top of the first 2 base units. And then I took the other 3 base units, flipped them upside down, and put them on top of the 2, you know, one. So I've basically got 3 sections. I've got a base unit, a wall cabinet, and then a base unit that's flipped upside down.
Okay, but with a base unit flipped upside down, then you've got a little trim up at the top, and it looks kind of built in. I mean, it looks
it looks really built in.
It would.
And by doing that, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to do it with the drawers, because the drawers are upside down.
Right.
So I pulled the drawers out. And unscrewed the tracks and move the tracks from the bottom to the tops of the drawers.
Ah, that's slick.
So now I've still got to put a bottom in them, but that's not a big deal because they had some, they came with little tabs that were built in to hold a shelf if you wanted to put a shelf in.
Uh-huh.
So I've taken those and just screwed those in around the bottom of each of the cabinets, and I've cut my plywood down, and I'm just going to lay it right in place.
And that'll make you a bottom?
And away we go. Quick, simple, and it came out when I priced it out by buying the plywood and to make all the shelves and yada, yada, yada. I came out about $200 to the bad. So these cabinets ended up costing me about $200 more than what all the plywood would have.
But are they finished or anything? Or they what are they? What is the surface of them?
They're unfinished poplar.
Okay.
Poplar. So they're a hardwood, and I'm gonna probably paint them or stain them or can I say just they're in the garage, so just leave them bare.
I wouldn't worry about it in the garage. But,
nah.
But the deal is,
I mean, they're
reason
all screwed together, and the bases of them, you know, underneath they had little shipping crates or little shipping pieces of wood, you know, nailed to the bottom of them.
Yeah.
I popped those off and got my little miter saw going and cut me 4-inch pieces out of those. They were about 4 inches wide, and they were the exact thickness between, they were like just about a 1/2 inch thick. So when I slid the two cabinets together, the molding that was on the front of the cabinets with that piece in between met flush. So I put screws in, you know, use that as the intermediate board and screwed in from both cabinets into it and into the other cabinet.
So they're tied together.
So they're all tied together.
Oh, that's neat.
Okay, but the only thing is in the set of cabinets that you flipped upside down, there's no shelf in those.
Right.
There's no bottom
shelf in those, so I've got to put a shelf because there's no shelf at the top of your cabinet.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, when in your cabinet, so
yeah.
That's what I've got with these pieces that I cut down.
If I understand this right, though, you have a base unit on bottom.
Right.
Then your upper cabinet's made to go on top next.
In the middle.
Aren't they not as deep?
Yeah, they're only,
they
only 12 inches deep.
Yeah, and so then have the...
it is actually hidden because at one, at the far end, is a garage wall.
Yeah, so what I'm saying, did you push them all the way back or did you bring them flush with the front?
They're all the way flush forward.
With the forward, so you have a little space behind them.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got a little stash area behind
them. Yeah.
Going in and knocking the back of that cabinet out.
Yeah.
And just allowing me the full depth.
You could an area back there.
Okay.
Well, that's where the government will look for you when they come in to get you. That's where you'll have your stash.
Campbell, where is it at?
That's where your stash will be.
And the dining room wall being behind it, there was an electrical outlet on the inside, but we never used it.
Yeah.
So I ran some wire in, you know, went through the wall, tapped into it, went up through the wall and came out the top. And the reason I didn't put three wall cabinets in is I've got a little compact refrigerator, TV, and stereo that I need out here. Gotta have a TV and a stereo in your wood shop.
Yeah.
I'm for the TV.
And that way with the fridge, I don't have to go in to get beer, you know.
There you go.
What a deal.
But if I would have put that other 15-inch wall unit in there, I wouldn't have had enough clearance to put that stuff on top of the other base unit.
Yeah, okay.
So that's basically when you come out, you've got two base units on top of each other. Next to it, you've got the base unit, the wall unit, and an upside-down base. Then next to that's another base unit, you know, wall cabinet and upside-down base unit.
And a place in the center for the TV.
And a place in there for the TV and all that good stuff. And then by being able to just tap into that electrical outlet, now I've got electricity there.
Yeah.
The cable I'm going to drop right down from the wall. I mean, right above it is our office where we've got cable. So I'm just going to, you know, get a splitter and drop a cable line straight down.
What a setup.
And all I need some dancing girls, and we're good to go.
There you go.
You TV folks. I wouldn't have a TV in my wood shop for anything in the world. That's where
you know what I use it for? It's really weird.
What?
I use it to tell time.
Well, you know,
what programs come on at certain times
of
day.
Don has these watches that we're selling now that you could,
four alarm watches.
You might try one of those.
I thought Blind Mice Mart had some talking watches.
Yeah, we do have. Yeah, that's a man using a watch. That's
yeah.
Fun. In fact, my neighbor, you know, the Russian gal, she just came back from China and she bought me a Rolex. She got four of them for $15.
Yeah.
Wow. Also,
yeah.
I have still keeping time.
Campbell, I don't hold that against you. I have TV in every bathroom in my house. So.
Do you?
Yes.
All right.
All right.
Oh, yeah, he's a TV-aholic. He's got to have the news all around.
On the patio, outside. It's going to be on the swimming pool pavilion, in the dog pen. They love Channel 9. And
turn on the dog whisperer and let them get after it, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. But, yeah, I mean, all in all, I mean, for the $200 difference, I mean, basically, these were dropped out here on a Thursday, and by Saturday, I had them all up and in place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I'd still be hanging doors. I didn't have to hang any doors.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, that was the way to go.
You know, cut anything down or any of that crazy stuff.
Oh, you'd still be making little plywood doors and trimming around them and hoping to hell they fit, you know.
Oh,
it would,
man.
It would have been a large...
There would be some language being used out here.
Think
I'm sure it probably wouldn't be appropriate
for
this neighborhood.
We've mentioned this several times before on the show. The people ask, you know, how would you do this or that? Now, any time that we see that it's available, we recommend that you buy something that's already made. I mean, it's
pre-made.
Just so much.
Yeah. Like
you know,
box.
Like a TV entertainment. The guy was going to build an entertainment. Man, take a Walmart special and modify it.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, because, I mean, yeah, when it's made on a machine like that, it's all going to match up. I mean, I called a few people that build cabinets, and I thought about some different ideas of building these where they were more or less just tied into the house. They weren't individual cabinets. But it all came down to the same thing. Man, I don't want to hang the damn doors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to take the time to sweat out there and cut this ply. I mean, when you deal with sheets of plywood, too, unless you've got a cool little guide like you have for your circular saw or the one I have, even cutting a piece of plywood and keeping it square...
Drilling those holes for the hinges and getting the right hinges.
Oh, yeah, you did it the right way.
Your saw's in the garage.
It couldn't be done, but I didn't want to be spending a month out here doing it.
Yeah,
kidding. You're in a piece of plywood in a two-car garage is an unwieldy thing. You don't want it. It's hard to handle. You know, you need two or three people to help you. And, you know, unless you're just in love with Of course, a lot of guys just like to build stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember when I did.
Now, it felt great getting out there, because that's the first time that I've really made some sawdust fly.
Yeah.
You know, I got my sawhorses out and, hustled that big old piece of plywood up on top of those dudes. And at first I cut about a 14-inch strip off of it because I needed the width. You know, I cut it down to the width of the cabinets, which was about 34 inches. And then from there I had to put some little 2x4s underneath it to support that plywood when I started whacking, you know, about 2-foot sections off of it.
What did you do with the plywood? I'm lost. You lost me here.
The plywood I'm using, the big strip that I cut off actually became a shelf in our laundry room. But the other little pieces that I cut off that are about 2 feet by roughly, call it 2 feet by 3 feet, are what I'm using for the bottoms of these cabinets.
Okay. The bottoms of the top,
you know, that go over the drawers.
I got you.
Upside down.
I got you. Upside down drawers.
Yeah.
They're
going to
become
the
bottoms of the top cabinets that are upside down.
Yeah.
I thought that I might be able to pop the bottom loose, but these cabinets were made a little bit better. They were actually cut, you know, they had a miter. They were set in place with a miter, so I thought, okay, I'm not going to start banging on those.
Well, then the structure, you'd lose the structure to come in. You'd just fold up. I mean, it wouldn't, because the bottom's what's keeping it square.
Yeah, it is.
I would think so.
Falling down. We don't need that.
You defeat your purpose. Just make some bottom pieces. I mean, you know, it's just a piece of plywood, and that's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah, and they'll go in. They'll fit in place really nicely. The one base unit, the one that the TV and all that's going to set up on, I knocked. You know, it's got that little kick plate at the bottom, I guess you can call it, that little 4-inch spacer. And I knocked the front of that out so that then I can put a shelf on the other, you know, the two sides in the back, put a piece of plywood on that, and it'll be a shelf, and then I'll have room, you know, slide in the stereo and some other small stuff, and then the TV and the refrigerator will sit up on top of that.
Oh, man, what a deal.
Hannibal Smith used to say on the A-Team, I love it when a plan comes together.
Those little things that you're building for the top cabinets that don't have any shelves, you put some little blocks underneath them to nail to.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, or the hardware store makes some little metal elbows that would also work.
Right. And, you know, one thing, too, I was thinking about, because I've got about a foot of clearance between the top of the cabinet and the ceiling.
Uh-huh.
And then coming out in front of the cabinet, I've got about, I'd say, probably less than a foot. Just about a foot to where that support beam runs.
Where the header
it comes
is.
Down out of the roof. You know, it drops down out of the roof. It's like a 2x12.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all sheetrocked in to look nice. But
I've been playing with the idea in my head of actually just putting a piece of 1x2 along the length of it to work as a support, and then laying some of that the little glass that you can get for fluorescent lights. You know, those little panels, those plastic panels that come like 4 foot by 2 foot.
Oh, and putting lighting up there?
Yeah, putting lights up above that.
Yeah?
But,
well, that would look real nice.
That we may not.
That would look real nice. Your wife would love that.
Yeah, yeah.
She could see.
And I'm thinking, man, if I do that, then she might be in and out of these cabinets. She's already out here licking her lips.
And
what are you going to be putting in those? And I was like, see all these boxes over here on my workbench?
All the stuff that's in that are going in these. I'm going to be organized someday, baby.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, that's one thing I really missed before was I knew, you know, I had everything up and to where I could get to it. I knew where it was.
Yeah.
But now it's all in boxes.
Oh, organized.
Out here, it's a big...
You have to be real careful about building something and then they appropriate it. I'm having an experience with the dog pen I built. Now it's all of a sudden going to come a storage area for her Discovery, you know, her Land Rover.
It's a new garage.
Yeah.
As if you didn't have enough garage.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right, yeah, that was a thing in the garage. The garage was my domain when we moved in. It was the only part of the house that's mine. I mean, even the bedroom's not mine. You know, I just get to sleep in there.
Yeah.
But next thing I know, I'm out here, and Candace is like moving my tools from one corner into another corner because she wants this corner for this.
Careful, you'll be outside.
I know it, man. It won't be long.
That's why
I gotta stake my claim.
I built a building of my own to prevent that, and it's worked so far. Pretty well. Luann came out here the other day. We were doing something, and she said, "Man, it's really nice out here, isn't it?" And I thought, "No, it isn't." You know, you won't like it, dear.
Not that nice.
Listen, we've made a decision that Dale is going to become kind of the fifth handyman next year. He's going to be a substitute when some of the guys can't make it. Well, we'll call Dale Campbell and let him help us with the handyman show. How's that sound?
That's great to me. Got my T-shirt on right now.
All right. I think that'll work good. Sir, have a nice new year, and we'll talk to you in a day or two.
Fantastic.
Thanks,
gentlemen. Y'all have a great new year. Happy hangover to everybody.
See you, buddy.
Talk to you in a minute.
Bye, y'all.
Bye. Dale Campbell, cooking in the dark.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, I guess we'll see you on the 9th of January. That's a long time off. Isn't
well, it
is.
If not, if we can't make it, Tommy can just call Dale. Right?
I can.
What do you think?
I can. I'm hedging. Exactly. It's called hedging my bets.
Hedging my Dale. So don't screw up anymore, Houston. I mean, that's the message there.
Oh, man, so much pressure.
Yeah.
Pressure. It's just terrible.
Pressure.
So I bet you we will see you on the 9th, Houston.
I'll be here, big fella.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Don Shaw.
Yep.
And Patterson.
Yes,
and,
sir. Love.
And Tom Houston.
Yes,
get the
sir.
Real announcer.
Thank you.
Into the
real
announcer. We need to reuse the real announcer 4 years. That's enough of him.
All right.
I'm Phil Parr. I see you, said the blind man. We'll see you on the 9th as he picked up his hammer and saw. Bye-bye.